You're Philip.
And that's Dana.
And we're Tango. You're Philip.
And that's Dana.
And we're Tango.
And thank you.
This is... wait, let me do it just me. Yeah. You're Philip.
And that's Dana.
And we're Tango. This is the second episode of
Thank You for Coming
with Kellen Rohde.
Hey.
Kellen Rohde is a Tango member community. What are you? You're a Tango.
I'm your employee, I thought. that's why I'm a little offended that you know, but my voice isn't as nice as yours for the podcast, so it does make sense. But you know, I would like to let everyone listening know we are all Tango.
We are all Tango. Kellen actually is the podcast producer, and all content, digital media, project management, creative producing extraordinaire.
That's so nice of you to say.
Yeah, welcome to the podcast. Kellen's also been one of my many male muses over the last decade. And I'm thrilled that he's agreed to join me on yet another crazy project.
All right, Philip, your turn to say nice things.
Kellen is our resident
Scorpio. Gorgeous.
You know, we said gorgeous and Scorpio at the same time, which kind of sounded like squirt for some reason in my head. Kellen's our resident squirt. No, Kellen is our resident gorgeous straight Scorpio. White man.
Kellen is the resident straight white man. He's the least cancelable straight white man I've ever met.
In existence, actually. Yeah. Everyone needs to take a lesson out of Kellen's book because he's doing it right. And today we're going to be talking about
dating.
Dating and online dating and what that looks like in today's world.
What does it mean to be single in 2020?
Is that pointed to me? That's pointed to me right now. We're not setting it up anymore.
Well, let's start it off with a segment.
Yeah. So we break this podcast into two lovely segments. The first segment is a quickie, Birds and the Bees. What was Birds and the Bees like for you? Whether it was your parents, your teachers, your friends. When I say Birds and the Bees, you say?
It was really easy. As you both know, I came from a pretty hippie California liberal background mixed with cosmopolitan because it was in LA, and so I got sex education when I was, I think, starting in like fourth grade, so I was like 9 or 10, and it didn't stop until I was 13 in eighth grade, and then never got it again in high school, and that's when all the like kind of social friend stuff picks up. But my experience with it was really pretty pleasant. We had a ding, question ding, box.
You want it to be pleasant.
Yes, we do. That's the whole goal. I think, I mean, yeah, it was really easy. It was really nice. That being said, there's still so much that I had to learn just by being a person in the world and by having friends and by having access to the internet and by going to school. So it is one of those things where, like, even though I think from everything I've learned from working with Tango and all the stories I've been able to hear, I had such an easy and pretty progressive sex education experience. It's still, you know, there was still a lot more to be done after the fact.
Sure. It seems like everyone's sex education at a certain point in time, and it seems to happen at, I mean, you're probably the latest that I've heard the sex ed going on for. I mean, like, up until eighth grade. I think that mine ended in the sixth grade. So there's, like, this non-continuation of sex ed past a certain age. Like, we assume
when
that
you're sexually active.
Once you become sexually active, you stop learning.
Yeah. Oh, completely. You're having sex? Yeah. Oh, we're done.
Or it's almost like we're just giving you the runway to puberty, and then it's really on your own
and
from
then
there.
You're smooth sailing.
Well, I think they also, like, you know, they always talk about how they don't want, you know, one of the reasons people are, like, anti-sex education or whatever in schools is there, like, it'll make kids like too promiscuous or whatever, but not having it in high school also just kind of then like has this default of being like, well, by the time you're 14, you're all gonna be, you know, fucking anyway, and so you're lost causes at that point. Mm-hmm. There's no point in teaching you anything anymore. You're already doing it, and once you start doing it, there's you have nothing to learn because you've already done it and now it's over.
And then it moves to your parents.
Yeah.
What are they willing to let you do or not do?
Totally.
And what rules of theirs are you willing to break? And the school's just kind of like, we did our job. What do you mean?
Yeah.
What do you mean? You know how to use a condom.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you have all these like, you get so much more creative with the rumors in high school also. So you're hearing all these horrible rumors like float. I remember when I was 14 hearing and probably believing longer than I'd like to admit that these kids over the summer had had sex and used a Doritos bag as a condom.
Stop.
And I remember hearing that outside the freshman year lockers at my high school in a group of people and all of us looking at each other and being like, yeah, that checks out. Of course. Why not? No one wanting to admit like at all that sounds like a horrible image, but I still think about that as being like,
and that there's no way that they did that.
No fucking way in the world. But maybe
mind is going to too many weird places right now.
No, it was but it's like, you know, you're 14 and then it's like there's nothing at all after that. No one's telling. I don't know.
So take us a little bit into the classroom of what this like very extensive, pretty pleasurable sex ed experience was like. Like, were you with other people in the class? Obviously other people, but were you with like all boys? Were the girls still in there?
It was with boys and girls. It was with everyone. The entire class would have probably maybe two, I think it was once a week. Once a week for an hour, the entire class would sit down and we would have what we called human development. We didn't even call it sex education. It was human development.
Oh, interesting.
And each year it kind of got a little more intense, I guess, or not intense, but a little more specific. So like, I remember clearly fourth grade having a segment on, you know, here are diagrams of like penises and vaginas and like, here's what they do. And here, like, let's all label them together as a class. And then another class, and then another, you know, lesson block being like, okay, we're going to list drugs now. Like, here's weed. Here's, you know, this is something called cocaine. Like, do you kids know about ecstasy? If you do it, you won't be able to hold a spoon, you know, like something like that. But then by the time I remember being in eighth grade and we had the same human development teacher, she taught all of us. Her daughter was a few years older than me, actually. And I knew her daughter. I knew her older son. She was the sweetest, coolest, like, she was such a great woman, is a great woman. She's still out there somewhere. I need to reach out to her. But she was, so she, like, kind of was, like, you know, she knew us all really well. And by our eighth grade, we had, I remember during the drug section specifically, we had, like, kids who were in, like, outpatient programs in Pasadena where our school was come and, like, speak to us. And some of these cases, these kids, we were, like, 13, you know, in eighth grade. Some of these kids were, like, 14 and a half through, like, 17. And some of them, like, knew other kids in our grades, like, brothers who were also in these programs with them. And, like,
oh, yeah.
So we were, like, sitting there so and LA. we had, and it's, like, you know, it's, like, but when you're in, you know, When you're in middle school, like, when do you really get the opportunity to, you know, sit down and ask someone who's like, I'm 17, I'm 16, and I was a meth addict, and like, I'm going to describe to you, you know, in pretty vivid detail, like, what it's like to do methamphetamine and like what the consequences of that are. And then also having like, we also had like more pleasant things of like, you know, parents at our school who were like gay parents all coming in and like talk to us about like what it's like being gay and like what it was like coming out and what it was like, you know, having kids and like how they feel about, you know, it got very holistic. Mm-hmm. Except for, you know, never really talking about like, it stopped being less about sex and more of just about like life.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Not that they aren't even connected, but I do remember by the end being like, wow, it's way more about, you know, all these other things that are all kind of connected and part of the same stream, which is like stuff people's parents don't necessarily want to talk to them about all the time.
Yeah.
I was saying that I cannot remember if anyone in sex education in high school ever explained the mechanics of sex, like the actual logistics of like penetration and putting a penis inside of a hole in the vagina. Like,
do you know how many boys out there right now truly believe that when they have sex, they are going to be like putting their penis in something that is like where their penis, you know what I mean? Like where the hole is different. I'm completely butchering this because I don't know how to do it with just words. But I remember as a kid, we all kind of thought like, I didn't know there were like multiple holes down there.
Yeah. There's
so many. And I remember being confronted with it for the first time and being like, wow, I actually have no idea where any of this stuff is.
Okay, so you're confronted with it, which kind of brings us into this segment of dating.
I guess it does, Dana. Yeah, it does.
Right? Every date is a hole.
Every date is just one big hole. So I guess the big question is, what does it mean to be a single man in 2020? And I mean, I think that
let's put some more filters on this. A single man in 2020, dating women, dating on apps versus not on apps, and how sex comes into this whole picture. I mean, like, when it comes to how does it come up in conversation versus do you have sex on the first date?
Yeah, we were talking about sex on first date. I don't do it. Philip only
absolutely
does it.
100%. If I want to read the resume, I'm going to read the full thing front
and
back.
You need to know their skills and interests.
Yeah.
No, I'm like, it really depends on like what period of time in my life I'm at. I've had certain times when I've really been like, I'm going to be restrained, you know, I'm going to be
a gentleman.
It's not even about being a gentleman. It's more for my own benefit. I'm like, yeah. I'm not going to have sex this time because I'm someone who has a really hard time, you know, saying no when everything's going like good. And there's no real reason to be like, besides my own like kind of esoteric thing of being like, I made a like promise to myself 4 hours ago that I was not going to have sex now. Mm-hmm. But now like, well, but like who fucking cares right now? Now, like who cares what I promise I made to myself 6 hours ago? Mm-hmm. But I would say I'm like probably in between you two. There are some times when I'm trying to think of the last time
I...
Were the
devil and angel on your shoulders?
Pretty much, honestly. I'm trying to think of the last time I, like, fucked on the first date when it was a date, you know?
Right.
Sure. Wait, what is the alternative?
You just meet someone out.
You meet someone
okay,
when
you
you're
out.
Out.
Yeah, okay.
Which also... This is also such a funny thing because it's like... I'm totally not the best person to be asking as like a representative of any dating population with the myriad of intersections. Cause I'm a very, I've been told I'm very picky. I'm just like, I'm shy and I'm picky.
So you're hard to date.
I would say
you're a local dater.
What does that mean, Dana?
We have a max radius.
I would say both geographically and like, close to home.
What
close
we
to the
know.
Heart. What you know. The devil you know.
I'll travel sometimes, but yeah, no,
it's
definitely
okay. I don't travel.
I'm definitely I know you don't. I know for a fact
I don't
that
travel.
You don't.
I'll pick
Hell
you up.
No, no, to travel. That's what I'm with
I'll pick
you, on.
You up, I'll drop you off, but I'm not getting on the subway.
I like well that's see that's the thing is like there's two prongs to the dating thing with the local and non-local. Cause on one side, who doesn't love being able to just like walk somewhere, meet someone, you both are in the same area, there's not this like negotiation of like well, why don't you come
middle.
Here meet in the middle
you
there is no middle
go to the
like,
same grocery
yeah,
store
oh the middle for us is the Brooklyn Navy Yard and there no like we can't hang out there in the middle of the you know Hudson River East River sorry
I mean you don't want to
edit that out
walk
edit that out I got the river right. But the other side, something I really like also, though, is, like, getting to know a new neighborhood. And, like, going out and, like, exploring and someone being, like... there have been times when someone's been, like, why don't you come to, like, where I live? And I'm, like, absolutely, yes, 100%. I'm super down. I will go to Crown Heights. I will go to, you know, Borum Hill. I'll go to Cobble Hill. Am I speaking too loud and now I need to bring it down because I got too excited?
I cannot get out of my head a picture of Kellen as Mr. Rogers going, won't you be my neighbor?
I think you're also a local dater in terms of your social web. Like, you like a friend of a friend or someone who kind of has been vetted by someone that you know, even if it's super, like, a vague connection.
That's really interesting, given what we're talking about with apps and everything,
yeah.
Because even though I am someone who had at various times been on several of the apps.
You've been digital.
I've been digital. There's a chance you could have found me or know me digitally.
And if you could all see, he's gorgeous.
Kellen is single at this point. What's his Instagram? _ Rhode. Rhode.
That's
Rhode.
Anyway, as I've had a lot of recent dates being, or people, you know, people I've met being through, kind of what Dana was saying, like friends of friends, which makes sense for why some of it can feel a little like local with me. Which is interesting. It wasn't anything that I like set off to do. I wasn't like, I'm going to exclusively meet people through IRL connections, through people actually in my life. But I just like remember looking back on it at one point and I was like, oh yeah, everything that I've done recently, every person that I've met and got a drink with or gone on a date with has all been through just like friend of a friend or in a place. And then we both, you know, sought each other out in some way.
Maybe a DM.
Maybe a DM. Yeah. Maybe a DM or two. Which I guess then takes it online again, but like, let's not split hairs over it.
I feel like we should jump into like an impromptu new segment.
Oh my God,
Q&A.
Please. Yes.
Q&A. We're going to do a flash Q&A about dating. It's like hot or not. It's fast answers. It's yes or no. It's this or that.
Here or there,
up or down, top or bottom. Okay.
Stops.
Okay. So first question. Just to go off of what we're just talking about, online or IRL?
IRL.
Top or bottom?
I always like to say I'm a little spoon with a big attitude.
Dinner or drinks?
Drinks.
Beer or wine?
Mm.
Beer, yeah.
Split or pay the bill?
Split. Absolutely. Mm. Unless the person is older than me and I know for a fact that they're doing better financially.
Sure.
In which case, I think it would be nice if they helped me out a little bit.
Sure.
Sugar baby or sugar daddy?
Ooh. Oh, sugar baby. Yeah.
Walker home or grab her a car?
Neither. Both of those sound like weirdly old-fashioned in a way. Even though,
well, this is assuming that you aren't having sex on the first date.
No. I know, totally. Also assumes we're not local in a way. Well, both of those questions kind of presuppose a different thing. But if I had to choose, probably Walker home.
Sure.
Yeah.
Host or travel?
Mm.
Really good one. Travel initially. Always travel. Until I feel... I'm like very... sensitive. I live in a crappy two-bedroom apartment in like what I'm pretty sure is just an old tenement building from like before World War One. I like my apartment, but like I also understand that like I like it and it's not for everyone. I recently listened to this interview with this writer Natasha Stagg on another podcast called New Models, and she made this point of like you cannot avoid the fact that if you ever walk into someone's apartment in New York, you will say, what the fuck? It's just, what kind of what the fuck are you saying?
Yeah.
So I try to avoid my what the fuck until farther down the road.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in the same way that I like seeing other neighborhoods, I love seeing other people's apartments. That's
love
so
seeing
fun.
Apartments.
Oh my God.
Okay, I have one last Q&A.
Okay.
It's a consent Q&A.
Mm.
It's a first kiss question. Do you ask or do you lean in?
I lean in, yeah. I don't think...
I think there's consent in both.
No, I don't think that there's
judgment on either. But I think that, like, no
I've
judgment.
Had people ask if they can kiss me. I'm just like, the first kiss especially, I'm like, I think there's just a shyness there for me. Even if I know it's going well and even if the person has said before, like, it'd be cool if you like kiss me next time. I will still probably be like,
slowly.
Yeah. Maybe it'd be nice. And just like slowly kind of be like moving like, oh, stop me if you hate this. And
okay. So I'm also a travel, always travel, rarely host. And for me, it's like 100% about safety and dating.
Yeah, the travel move is definitely if you feel like, oh my God, I'm gonna need to get out of here. And if I'm gonna need to get out, I need to get out on my terms.
Yeah. I mean, especially when you're meeting someone that you have no connection to.
I mean, in gay male Grindr world, you're talking to people that could be catfishing you. Yeah. And, like, you haven't vetted them in any way. So, you need, like, an out. If you host, then you have to, like, take into consideration that you might be kicking somebody out of your apartment. Yeah. Or doing something that you really don't want to do and you don't want to be in that position.
Well, as a woman, leaving is way easier than asking someone to leave.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And that's just the ins and outs for me.
I would so much rather have someone, like, shittily tell me or be like, you know, like, just be like, yeah, now it's time for you to get the fuck out. And then have to be like, I need you to leave because, like, for no other reason other than, like, I don't. It never, I mean, it's like, no one ever wants to, kicking people out of your apartment is just always shitty.
Wait, yeah. Question for the group. Has anyone been kicked out?
Oh, so many. Like, kicked out, you mean, like, thrown on my ass, been like, get the fuck out now?
You piece of shit.
No.
Don't come around here.
Because, as we discussed earlier, I'm really pleasant, and I'm really fun to be around. But I've had so many times where I've been with people, and they're like, I've got stuff to do in the morning, and, like, you should go now. And I'm like, yep, I appreciate that. I'm going to remember how you said it, so the next time I have to tell someone that, I'm going to.
I've never been kicked out at night, but I've definitely, I dated this neurotic banker. Dated is a strong term.
Yeah.
I had an ongoing romantic sexual experience with a banker who was incredibly neurotic. And in the mornings, he'd wake up at like 6 o'clock in the morning without fail and basically like wait for me to wake up and leave.
He would wait for you to wake up. So that you could leave his apartment?
Yeah, he just, like, wanted to work. He'd, like, wake up at, like, 6 a.m. and start working.
Oh, that is a skill that everybody needs to hone, which is understanding the moment when you have to go. Yeah. Because I mean, personally, when I was dating, I never wanted anything to be out of my control. And I figured out a way to control everything, which is not exactly the key to dating. You're not going to control the other person. Yeah. But yeah, even if it's like I'm going to pick up on the signal that you don't want me here before I'm not wanted. But that's hard.
And kicking out is hard. Like when I'm ready. I'm usually ready before the other person.
Let's go back to the dating tips because, ooh, this part is the hard part of it.
Wait, before we get into tips, I think that this is like a good commercial break.
I agree. Let's take a little pause. So,
Second segment
is a definition.
Define a word.
So, Kellen, can you define the word one night stand? That's not one word. That's not one word. But can you just find the phrase one night stand?
No, I think we can make that a word. One night stand.
See, one word.
Okay. A one night stand is a interaction between two consenting adults.
Consent. Yes.
That happens.
Hey, another C word.
That happens without planning. And does not have a follow up. I think a one night stand is really just a isolation of time. Mm-hmm. I don't think if you can't be like, and this is my husband and we met after a one night stand. No, you're married. You're married. You started dating and you had sex the first time you met, but that's, you know, not a one night stand. A one night stand is a thing that you share with another person because that's like the only way to describe the time that you shared. You didn't date. You didn't hook up. You had a one night stand together, and that's your unit of time.
Sure, but no follow up, not even like a text the next day. No,
no text the next day is totally fine. Maybe you can get coffee. I'm talking about
as
like,
long
you know,
as you never see each other again. I think it
sort
you
of makes
have
sense.
No
as
contact well, for the rest of your
as
life.
As long as you cannot use another word to describe it. It's that is the word you use in the absence of a lot of other things. Because there's, you know, if I were to see someone like twice, I'd be like, yeah, we hooked up maybe or something. You know, like,
yeah,
I guess
this is making me think that there.
If we had gotten dinner a few times, then it's like, then I'd be like, okay, maybe we like dated or whatever, you know, we were seeing each other. But one night stand is like so cut and dry. It's like there was one interaction. It took one night. And we stand because we both stood up to leave afterwards and never speak to each other again.
We mostly only stand once.
Once.
Okay, so I was thinking, and maybe this was only my assumption of a one-night stand, but that, so in my head, I don't think a one-night stand is someone that you meet on an app. I think that a one-night stand is someone that you meet out. You...
Oh, you can have a one-night
stand. Oh, yeah, no. I would also say that my preferred definition for one-night stand is also, like, you meet them out.
Yeah.
What if it's a same-day, like, match on app, chat maybe back and forth for an hour, and immediately go for
Totally, but, I mean, if... Because we're only defining one word, which is one-night stand.
One-night stand.
One-night stand. If there were multiple words we could use, then we maybe could start qualifying it. But yes, for the sake of brevity, a one-night stand, you can also talk to someone beforehand in the same way you would, you know.
God, I love dad humor so much. I don't know about anybody else, but I'm just thinking about, like, someone could do the definition for a one-night stand where it's like, well, I only have one nightstand.
Reminds me recently. This is so funny because recently, on the subject of literally the physicalization of that pun, a friend of mine when I was recently back home visiting for the holidays, a friend of mine had just bought a new nightstand, and it came with two, and he was assembling both because he has a girlfriend. We were he was assembling it in front of all of us, and we were all like, whoa, like, you, what do you need two nightstands for? I guess this is like
I guess it's not a one night stand. I guess it's a
two night stand. I'm like, wow. No, two night stand. I was like, that's like,
you got a girl
better.
Stand.
You
You're
better
marry
both
her.
Be on the lease or something. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Something like that. That's like,
no, never let them on the
imagine,
lease.
Imagine. I mean, I wish I had enough room in wherever I live to just have, like, you know, the floating nightstand for whoever comes over and be like, you can put your stuff there. It's not going to get tangled up. It has its own iPhone charger. It's got a drawer. Like, all this stuff. Almost like a hotel. It's replaced freshly, and it's got, you know, maybe a disposable toothbrush, a little hand soap, a shower cap. I'm just thinking of stuff that's
Imagine. Oh my God. Well, the nightstand is a very personal piece of furniture,
I
would say.
Do you ever look into the nightstands of people you're dating?
The second they leave the room.
Oh my God. Are you guys... Oh, you people are psycho.
The second that they leave the room.
No, no. It's the privacy is paramount.
I haven't.
Oh my God.
So you just outed yourself as someone who's just...
The second they leave the room.
See, I think about it. I think about it the second they leave the room. And then I'm like, be good. Be good.
Oh.
It's active. It's super active. It does not come naturally for me to ignore that.
I'm like hearing smash in my head. I'm like, gonna be bad.
Well, that's just like... Looking into someone's phone, except, like, so much more boring. Like, the kind of stuff you're, like, what do you really think you're going to find in someone's nightstand that's going to be, like, that tantalizing? Besides a sex toy or, like, lube or those are the only, maybe a dosist or something. Like, I don't know. There's really nothing.
I like this person's nightstand that you're describing.
I just, like.
I mean, I look around the room.
I think it's my nightstand that I'm describing right now.
Do you have a nightstand?
I do have a nightstand. It's actually an office filing drawer from IKEA that is not very well assembled, but it's very heavy, and I just haven't found the right nightstand for it.
That's a
to
deep
replace
drawer.
It yet. Well, that's the thing is I saw it, and I was just like, three drawers, each one deeper than the last. So many sex toys, so much lube, so many condoms, and so many doses that I can fit in this drawer.
Oh my God.
In these drawers.
Three holes, one bigger than the next.
Yeah. No, truly. My nightstand, it can fit so much. The entire thing is essentially a drawer, which is what I need.
If you don't snoop, do you research?
Can you?
Oh, see, that's where I don't.
What do you mean researching? Like
researching your date before you meet them?
Like a Google, a LinkedIn, a Facebook, Instagram, a Venmo, like Oh yeah, I mean, my friends and I are like FBI.
Well, see, that's the thing, Dana. I was gonna say I don't need to because I'm friends with you, and so you will do it all for me and then report back everything I need to know. I'll maybe like search on like I think Instagram is the most appropriate one. That's not violating anyone too much because if it's private, then you're like great, can't know anything. Right, maybe right. I see, oh, we're mutual friends with someone I went to camp with. I'll keep that in mind and bring it up. Bring it up really and try to make it not seem like I looked at your Instagram profile that said, please don't look at this, but that was the bit of information that was given to me. I don't want to go research. Too deep in because you want to be surprised.
You like you to go see the movie without watching the trailer.
Exactly. Oh my God. Watching movies without trailers is such a it's such a rare thing in this day and age. And when you do it, it fucking rules. I saw Sicario without ever having a trailer for it. Blown away. One of my favorite movies of all time. On my list for the top of the decade. Every date I've been on that, you know, I didn't Google and watch the trailer equivalent of beforehand. The best, because you get to learn all this stuff.
Well, effectively, the research is actually only setting yourself up for failure. Because in what case is it actually not? If they
in what case is it actually useful and not just detracting away from the entire point of doing this thing in the first place?
Yeah. Huh.
So you get to this point where you're like, if you do too much and you're like, and that is honestly one of the things I think sometimes where like IRL can become a little like if a friend wants to set you up as opposed to like you searching it out or something, or like friend of a friend comes and finds you or something like that. Then you have this thing where you're like, shit, like we already went through all the like basic initial stuff, like we know enough about each other that, but now it's like we're getting a drink together and like what should we be talking about because we move past it but we're also not like super tight.
Do I bring up the stuff that you've already posted about on your social media that I know and I stalked, or do I just bring up something that I'm thinking about, which is way scarier?
I totally do a thing where I'm like, I will ask you to re-clarify a question I know for a fact you have answered about like something in your like I'm like, oh, so you're from Pretoria, Washington, right? Not Seattle. I have that right. Like 100% I'm totally guilty of it. I will do it and I'll do it with anything that like, you know, has been brought. Like you work at X agency, not Y.
Yeah, I don't think the research helps or detracts really that much, but it definitely sets like a good like tone or like level of safety. Like I like knowing that someone has some sort of trackable presence. Like the neurotic banker didn't have any trace on the internet.
Untrustworthy.
And it was like a little freaky. Like there were moments where I was like, I hope that all of my friends are checking by my friends right now and know where I am.
I feel like I can say this because, like, there's no way in hell this person would ever know I'm talking about them. But my sister comes home the other day and she's, like, telling my mom and I, oh, so, wait, I'm gonna start this over. Okay, so, like, my sister comes home the other day and she tells my mom and I, so, I went on a date with this really nice guy. He's an FBI agent. And my mom goes, are you sure he's an FBI agent? Because I think that if he were, he wouldn't be telling you.
Yeah, I love that.
Whoa, that is a really good and fair point.
Yeah. Oh, my mom is the sharpest.
Yeah.
The sharpest.
Are there any professions that you wouldn't date?
Me, the guy who runs operations for a startup sex wellness company? No, I can't really afford to be that choosy right now.
I mean,
that being said, I guess
if you like, had to pick,
is someone who like clubs baby seals in Nova Scotia? That's maybe my deal breaker thing.
What about like you know, like hula girl? Not, and I'm not talking about hulas in Hawaii. I'm talking about like hula on the arms at a rave girl.
Sure. Well, that's like a cultural milieu. Not necessarily not.
I'm not going to answer that only because that's not a profession. That is a lifestyle choice.
Yeah.
We can move on from that.
I mean, my only profession that I won't like go near is like someone who like has given up. Like it doesn't matter what it is.
A failure.
Like, yeah, I didn't want to say a loser, but like a loser.
But what if someone pivoted?
No, pivots are great. Pivots are bold. We stand a pivot. Brave. Pivots are strong. For me, it's more just like,
I did this and it was too hard.
I did this and it was too hard, or like, I still am passionate about this, but I'm making no moves towards executing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I am like only committed to like my survival or service job and have no longer made any sort of movements of passion towards the thing that I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the question, Dana. I'll pose it to both of you now.
Oh.
In a way. I'm going to reverse the interview.
So meta.
Am I a loser or am I a pivot?
You're a pivot.
I'm a pivot. You guys aren't just saying that.
You're
because
a pivot.
I work with you on the same project.
You're such a pivot.
You're a pivot.
Ladies, he's a pivot.
No, pivots are brave. Pivots are strong. I am queen of pivots. I'm pivoting every 365 days. And pivots are like,
I'll give you the
growth.
Loser.
Pivots
I'll give you
growth.
The loser. The loser is, so...
I dated a loser.
I
could just describe him.
Loser, I'll do mine and then you do yours. This isn't nobody. I'm basing this off fiction. Loser's like, I was in accounting and it was too much for me. I now work in a pet store.
That was interesting.
Maybe I just have more, maybe I just like people a lot more, but I if someone was like, I was an accountant and now I work at a pet store, I'd be like, that's so fascinating. Tell me everything about accounting and then tell me everything you know about dog food. Is it true? What am I really giving my dog?
Okay, so that is a pivot for me, unless this person was like, I miss accounting so much. I love numbers. I love how numbers make me feel.
Oh,
numbers are
yeah,
my passion.
I get that.
But I couldn't cut it. That, for me, is the loser. If
I know.
You go from numbers to pets, do what you want to do.
Yeah.
But, like, for me,
I
it's
take
about,
mine back. Yeah, you're right. You changed me.
Did I?
Yeah.
No, for me, it's like...
Well, it's an attitude thing. So much
it's
of this
an
stuff,
attitude.
It's your attitude, it's your outlook, it's your disposition, it's how do you... You know, how are you presenting it? Because you can tell if someone's not happy with their life.
Yeah,
I've been one of those people. What's dating like in 2020? You can really tell how people feel about the state of the world. I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think it's pretty clear. You can tell what you know is on people's minds.
First sign of a good date, I think, is that
politics, religion.
No, I was although so. But good sign of a first date is that you actually don't talk about what you do on the first date.
Well,
like what you do as a job.
So your job. Your job.
I think it depends on how you meet. Yes. 100% yes. But I've said this in our first podcast, which is that the barrier to entry when you meet someone random on an app is... heavy,
mm-hmm.
It's heightened,
mm-hmm.
That's a bigger wall to climb. And I think I don't judge the bullshit, like, random small talk topics that we have to go through to, like, push past the fact that we are two strangers meeting blind.
Oh my God. I mean, like, even past dating, I feel like I'm already, like, on the brink of vomiting every time I say to somebody, it's January 6th today, and I'm like, Happy New Year.
Yeah.
I'm like,
I'm sorry I said Happy New Year. Okay, Philip. I'm sorry I said it when I saw you walk through the door today.
No, it's not to you, Kellen. I actually wanted to tell it to you. It's like to my, like, it's like to the Uber that you get in. It's to the person at the grocery
the
store.
Pleasantries.
It's to
the
your mom's
pleasantry.
Friend that you run into on the
like,
street
oh,
or whatever, and you're like, oh, Happy New Year.
It's when you start talking like this.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Bye. Happy New Year.
Oh my
God, it was
so good. It was so relaxed.
I was at a friend's birthday party this past weekend, and I had, you know, just gotten back from visiting home, and I was very guilty of being like, and I remember at the end of the night kind of being like, why did I keep, it made it sound like I did not want to talk to anyone there when actually like all of them were my friends and I would have been happy to talk to them about anything, but I just had to be like, hey, lean in. Happy New Year, like something like that. And I was like, what the fuck is wrong with me?
What's the weirdest thing you've talked about on a first date or a date?
Someone once asked me, what do I think I'm most susceptible to? And it's a question I think about constantly.
That kind of question sticks with you.
Oh, it really does.
What was your answer?
I can't even remember what I said, but I remember her being like, I think I know what you're susceptible to.
Oh, I don't like that.
Religion. No, I loved it. I was like, I'm like, if someone's going to ask me that question and then answer it for me based on us, like, just sort of knowing each other, that's fucking cool.
That's some bottom energy. As long as that,
I was gonna say,
I was like, it's such a risk to ask me that question, such a risk to like listen to me ramble on about the answer I can't remember now. But then such a like, what an incredible risk to then be like, I actually have your answer for you and to give it to me. And I was like, whoa, no, you're right. Actually, I think that is like
it's religion.
It was religion, and I've noticed it since that. This was like a little over a year ago. I have like watched myself sometimes being like looking at like, you know, watching like a documentary about like religious communities or like reading on Wikipedia about like, you know, like getting into a hole and being like, oh, I'm going to read everything about like Quakers right now and being like, oh, this shit actually sounds like really good. Like, oh, not that I was like totally not raised religious. Church was actually a punishment for me when I was a kid. If I was being bad, my mom would be like, you're going to church this Sunday.
Oh yeah.
No one enjoyed it. Yeah. But I do kind of find myself being like I am kind of fascinated by religion. I think because I had like, it's one of those things where it's like, you can't, even if you're raised in an atheist household, which, like, I was probably raised in an agnostic one, but, like, even being raised in the absence of religion, it's still there. You can't ignore it. Yeah. And it's a similar thing to, like, sex, where it's, like, there are just certain things in this world that, like, they exist, and the negative space of them not being in your life is akin to them being in your life. You still have to negotiate yourself around these things. You still have to think about these things, and you still have to think about your relationship to them. And so,
just where acceptance and shame come in.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Like taxes.
Kind of, yeah. I am ashamed and scared to think about taxes. I am not ashamed and scared to think about religion and sex.
Sure. Do you have any, like, dating goals or dating habits that you want to set into play for 2020?
I hate that all... No, I don't want any of this on the record.
We're gonna, you know what we're gonna do? We're gonna make you an IRL.
I don't want any of this. The whole podcast.
Here's more the thing, recorded, like, Kelly. I want you guys to set my dating goals and dating records after having me in the hot seat. Everything you've heard, you know, you can each set, how about we close it out? You each set a dating goal for me in 2020.
Here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna base it off of the way that Lex app, which we love, uses.
Yeah. I like love bios. Lex app. I am really upset that it's not an app
Lex
that
app, I can use,
but I understand why.
We would love to have you on the podcast.
Please.
We would love to host an event with you. We stand.
We just love you. So we're going to make Kellen a Lex app profile virtually IRL for us in this moment on this podcast. So okay. Title would be... I was gonna say,
are we trying to say this at the same time?
Oh, no. Let's start. I'll make the title and then you will make the description.
Oh, okay.
So, it's gonna start with bottom boy. Sure. Four, it's the number four. Four. Mom. Bottom. No, it can't be mom. That's too, like, emotional.
That's really Oedipal.
But I'm just trying to get, like, an older woman.
Okay, what if it's...
You make the second half of
bottom that. Bottom boy.
Four.
Four. Number four. Futch daddy.
Futch? Yeah. What's futch
What's
mean?
Futch?
Fembutch.
Ooh. Yeah.
Bottom boy for Futch mommy.
Should we all say it at the same time?
Bottom boy for Futch daddy.
Cute.
Okay. All right. I think, okay. All right. So that's the title of my Lex profile. What are the, like, How do I present mice? I guess that, but that kind of.
Okay.
Find me reading on the subway and come say hi.
Looking for answers, looking for directions, I follow them well.
Wow. That's my boss. Wow, that's great. That's the best. This is the best performance review I've ever had, you guys.
I love it.
I love it. So, thank you so much, Kellen, for doing this podcast.
Thank you guys so much for including me. I can't believe I got to come on this early.
And I think, I mean, for everyone listening out there, first off, thank you for listening. And again, this is just an example of how we're talking about sex, about pleasure, about consent, about dating within Tango. And we want to talk about it with you. So reach out to us if you want to come on our podcast. And thank you for coming.